Agenda item number five. Report and possible discussion on legislative update by Matt Phillips, Government and Customer Relations Manager.
Good morning. I'm going to tell you guys what's going on with the session. I could make it short and just say that everything's going to die. That would be relatively easy, and it wouldn't be very far from the truth. If I were to describe kind of the nature of the session in one word, it would be slow. It's probably one of the slowest legislative sessions I've ever seen. And to give you an idea of how slow it's moving, we're almost in May, got about 5 weeks left. And on both sides, in both bodies, I haven't seen a Senate committee hear a House bill yet, and I haven't seen a House committee hear a Senate bill yet, with the exception of the budget. And that's the only one. So things just really aren't moving. And I think what that is, it's a reflection of the disagreements between the two bodies on some major issues. One of them is the budget, and then you've got some hot button issues like sanctuary cities, bathroom bills, things like that, that they're not particularly in agreement on. School vouchers is another big one. And I think that obviously what that usually ends up creating is kind of a giant staring contest where both bodies are just looking at each other, waiting on the other to blink. You know, who wants to pass stuff bad enough? And I think that until they get some sort of agreement, at least on the budget, which the conference committee on the budget is going to start meeting this week, you're going to see things continue to move pretty slow. You know, the House will continue to pass House bills over to the Senate, and the Senate will continue to ignore them, and vice versa. So, getting into stuff that's a little bit closer to us that we care about, and I always say this before I get into these, this is by no means an exhaustive list of everything we're tracking or everything that's out there or moving. It's just kind of a snapshot of some of the stuff we're looking at and some of the stuff we're paying attention to. Surface water permitting. I talked a little bit about some of this in the update in January. But the first three of these, 225, 3742, and 226, are really meant to address the issue of how can we speed up surface water rights permitting at TCEQ. It's a process that, as we know, takes a really long time, and the legislature is very interested in how you can make that process move faster, because obviously having all the money in the world to throw at projects is great, but if you can't get a permit, it really doesn't matter. The first two of those address the State Office of Administrative Hearings process as it relates to water rights. And essentially what they do is they limit the number of parties that can be added at SOA. They limit the number of issues that can be added at SOA, and they put a timeline on how long a permit can be at SOA at 270 days. Now, that timeline can be extended by the judge for good cause, but it's at least a deadline that exists or will exist in statute if these pass, and where no deadline exists today. The second one, 226, is meant to speed up small permit amendments. So in a situation where you've got a water right permit and you want to change the use of it from a consumptive use to another consumptive use, obviously not from non-consumptive to consumptive, or you want to add or move a diversion point in a way that doesn't increase your appropriation or diversion rate and doesn't affect another water right holder, it puts those on a fast track so that TSEC staff doesn't spend a bunch of time working on those kind of amendments, and they can spend more time working on bigger water right permits. Update of the WAMs is obviously a big deal and something that we're very supportive of. Water rights permitting is based on water availability models, all of which have not been updated to reflect the most recent drought. And so the legislature is directing TCEQ via these two pieces of legislation, one of which, 696, is actually going to be heard in committee today, to update all of the water availability models for all the river basins. And Brazos is in there, and we're one of the first ones they would be required to update. Now, as with everything, that just takes money. TCEQ is going to need an appropriation in order to be able to pay to update the WAMs. And right now, if you were to look at the budget as it exists today, they've got an appropriation of about $2 million to do that process. And that is not enough. It will not be enough for them to complete all of the WAM updates for all the basins they'll have to do. If they end up with just the $2 million, at least they can get started on some of the basins. So, you know, it's better than nothing. So at least from this point going forward, if they're able to update the WAMs, then permitting would be based on the most recent drought information that we have. Chapter 11 cleanup. There's a lot of stuff in Chapter 11, which is the water rights permitting statute, that's outdated. Lots of references to the Texas Natural Resources Conservation Commission, which is obviously now TCEQ. Things like requiring applicants to submit maps on old onion paper, which nobody does that anymore anyways. Everybody uses GIS, so it's just updating a lot of the old antiquated stuff that nobody uses. And then the groundwater alternate supply one is an interesting one. in many cases, TCEQ as a condition of granting a water right will require a water right holder to have an alternate source. And in a lot of cases, that alternate source is groundwater. But when they require that in a permit, they don't give notice to the groundwater district where the person is supposed to get this alternate supply of groundwater. And so this requires groundwater districts to receive notice of those types of permits from going forward.
Is it just notice?
It's just notice.
Or anything like that.
No. Just I mean, obviously, okay. They would have to approve the permit for groundwater if the person were to go get it. So they would have that
at that time. No,
at that time,
it's not okay.
Right, but no, they're not in a position to approve or not approve the water right itself. Moving into groundwater. The groundwater bills this session fall into two basic categories, agreed to and not agreed to, which is pretty much what everything falls into. But when I say that, I mean agreed to by the groundwater community and then not so much. The first grouping, 774, 2378, and 1009 and 4017 fall into that agreed to category, where these have been worked out between the groundwater districts and either the legislators or the groundwater marketers. They're pretty simple and basic in terms of what they do. The first two, right now, in some districts, you can get an operating permit and a permit to transfer groundwater out of the district, but you have to get two separate permits. And those permits, in terms of when they expire, don't have to align. So you can run into a situation where you have a permit to produce groundwater, but your transport permit has expired, so you don't have a permit to export it. And particularly for municipal suppliers who are moving water out of a district, that's a problem. And so this requires districts to align those two permits going forward so that transport permits will only expire at the same time or need to be renewed at the same time as production permits. 1009 and 4017, it basically says that districts can't change the rules for what makes a permit administratively complete while it's pending. Apparently some districts were doing this. They didn't want to address a permit. They didn't want to consider it, and so they would just never consider it administratively complete. They would continue asking the applicant for more and more information until the applicant just said, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, and just withdrew their permit. So it makes it clear that whatever rules and whatever requirements exist on the day you file your permit, those are the ones you use going forward. The last grouping is kind of the not-so-agreed-to category. Right now, if an individual sues a groundwater district or takes them to court, the groundwater district can be awarded attorney's fees if they win, but the individual cannot. And so this would award attorney's fees to the individual. It would basically put everybody on the same footing. Groundwater districts are not particularly fond of that. They would rather not have to pay attorney's fees. Their argument is that they don't want to have to make decisions and be constantly worried about being sued and having to pay the cost of someone else's lawyer and court costs. Obviously, the rebuttal to that is you're probably going to get sued no matter what you do, and everybody who's in the suit should have equal opportunity to have their court costs and attorney's fees paid. And then there's a couple of very broad Chapter 36 revision bills. Chapter 36 is the section of the water code that governs all groundwater districts. And these make some pretty broad sweeping changes that not all groundwater districts are particularly fond of. 1392 particularly requires districts to adopt uniform rules across the state, particularly if they're over one aquifer. Districts don't like to do that. They like to adopt their own individualized rules for their own area. And the purpose of this is to try to get rid of this piecemeal approach where you've got different regulations over the same aquifer, depending on what district you live in. But again, the districts are not fond of that, and I'm not sure whether or not that's going to get through. They're currently fighting over it pretty heavily. Water planning. The first two kind of make some basic updates to the water planning process. It's been in existence since 97, but there haven't been any major updates to it since then. Probably the biggest two things that those bills do is they give certain water planning groups who choose it, regional water planning groups, the ability to plan on a 10-year cycle instead of a 5-year cycle. There are some regions that just don't have enough going on. They don't have enough projects. They don't have enough population growth. Region O might be one of those, which is in our basin, that it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to have to go through the time and the expense of doing a full plan update every 5 years. So under this scenario, they could do a more basic update where they would just look at their population stuff and resubmit what they submitted the last time, as long as nothing major has changed. Those two bills also create an interregional council that includes a member or the chairs of each of the regional water planning groups and requires them to start meeting. You know, obviously you have 16 different regional water planning groups. They all have different plans, and that creates a scenario where you can have conflicts among the regions. And so the purpose of creating that interregional committee is to get the different regions talking so that you try to avoid conflicts before they happen. Will it do that? Probably not, but at least they'll know about them, and at least they'll have to start meeting. The second two are kind of a no-brainer, but apparently there are regions that don't operate by open meetings and open records, even though they're technically a public body, so it will require them to from now on. As part of Brazos G and the administrative agent, we already do that, so no worries. The last two, I call them U.S. Steel. It's Buy America, and this has gotten some attention recently at the federal level with Buy America requirements, but it's playing out also at the state level. There's a couple of different bills to require state agencies and other political subdivisions to buy U.S. Steel when doing projects. And in particular, these two bills will apply that to projects that are funded by the Water Development Board that are in the state water plant. And that's not necessarily a problem. It's not something that we don't necessarily support. But as people implementing projects, you need some leeway at times to be able to source materials elsewhere, particularly in a case where the materials might not be available, particularly in the quantities that you need them, or the price of them is so much more astronomical than where you could get it somewhere else that it'll drive your project cost up. So you need some leeway in your ability to operate under that Buy America requirement, which is kind of what brings up these second two bills. You've got one that requires it, and you've got another couple that relax it. The hope is that if this one passes too. I think what you'll end up with is a combination of both, and I think these will likely be amended to include some relaxed requirements. That so from now on, you'll be required to go through the Buy America stuff, but at the same time, if it increases your project cost up to a certain percentage, you'll get exempted from it, or if it's not available in the quantities, you can be exempted from it and things like that. So hopefully there'll be a middle ground reached on that one. Brackish and seawater desal. We talked a little bit about this in January when I went through kind of what I thought the focus of the legislature would be. And on these, I kind of call them emerging technologies. They're no longer emerging. They exist. We know that they're there. They're more expensive than a lot of your traditional projects. But it's something that the legislature has really put a focus on, creating a regulatory framework to make these things easier for folks that want to do them to do. And so they're doing a little bit of that this session. The expedited permit amendment for a desal project, that's for a situation in which a water right holder, let's just say in the lower part of the Brazos Basin, just for instance, wanted to do a desal project, but they also have their own surface water right. And as part of the overall project, they would like to move the diversion point for that surface water right upstream so that they can either use it somewhere else or potentially sign it and sell it or assign it to someone else to offset the cost of a desal project. This allows them to do that, puts them on a fast track at TCEQ to be able to add that diversion point, so long as it doesn't increase their diversion rate, increase the overall appropriation. So it creates a scenario where you can kind of pair your surface water right with a potential desal project. 2377 is basically an answer to the question of districts where people want, groundwater districts where people want to desalinate brackish water, but groundwater districts don't have rules to allow for it. It actually is a scenario where the Water Development Board has identified several areas of the state where brackish desalination makes sense, and those areas are in groundwater districts, and people that want to do projects want to access the brackish groundwater, but the groundwater district doesn't have rules to allow them to do so. So it requires districts to create rules that put brackish desal on an equal footing with freshwater, groundwater production. Permit for brackish desal return flows, that's a situation where it puts bed and banks water right permits on a fast track at TCEQ if the source of the bed and banks is brackish water desal. So you can produce brackish desal, put it in the stream, move it down and use it somewhere else, and it allows you to get a bed and banks permit faster in order for you to do that. And then state participation for seawater desal and aquifer storage and recovery. That's an interesting one because right now at the Water Development Board, the state's main involvement in projects is grants and loans. You know, so they grant out money or loan out money. But at the end of the day, the state itself is not a project partner. They're not necessarily an owner of a, let's say, a desal plant. This bill would allow the Water Development Board to take a chunk of what's called state participation funding, and it's roughly about $200 million. And use that money to actually buy into let's say, a desal project. So in this case, it would be the state actually investing in projects as opposed to just granting or loaning money for them. The purpose of it is to see if a lot of that private capital that folks talk about being out there wanting to invest in Texas water, but not being willing to because the state doesn't have any skin in the game, is actually out there. So it's trying to test that theory to see if, okay, if Water Development Board buys in as a project partner, will a bunch of private entities come in and help fund the project as well? Aquifer storage and recovery. House Bill 2005 requires the Water Development Board to study all the different river basins and see if there are areas and identify areas where taking water out of the surface water and during times of flood flows and storing it in the ground makes sense. So doing aquifer storage and recovery. Right now, I think there are many areas where people think it might work but don't know. And so it requires the Water Development Board, similar to the study they did identifying brackish water desal zones, to go through the state and identify areas where doing ASR would make sense for entities. And then House Bill 3991, along those same lines, gives you the opportunity to get a permit at TCEQ and kind of puts you on a little bit of a fast track to appropriate excess flood flows that you're going to use and store in the ground. That's the first part of what that bill does. The second part of what that bill does, which is even more interesting, it allows an entity that has a reservoir permit to go to TCEQ and amend their reservoir permit to turn it into an ASR project. So instead of storing water in a reservoir, you'd be storing it under the ground. And do so in a faster way, so long as you're not increasing the amount of water that you're trying to store. Whether or not anyone's going to do that, I don't know. I mean, it would essentially be like us taking Allen's Creek and saying, okay, we're no longer going to build a reservoir. We're going to store that in the ground. You know, give us a permit to do that. So it creates a framework for folks to be able to do that. Switching gears a little bit, contracting. There are several bills that have been filed this session that are just bad. From a standpoint of contracting, they would not be helpful for us or any other public entity that has a contract with an outside contractor or engineer. The two that I'll focus on the most are this first one and this last one. 1053 reduces the statute of limitations on when you can go after a builder for doing a bad job, basically. Right now it's 10 years. It reduces it to 5 years. We do large projects, and sometimes we're not going to find major problems or defects within 10 years, much less 5 years. This building is a good example of that. You know, most of the issues with that weren't found until the 11th year. And so shortening that is obviously problematic for entities that build large projects. And then this last one, retainage. As you all know, that, you know, we have retainage in our contracts, and it's something that we use to make sure that we get the work done the way that we want it. This would limit retainage to 5%, or in some cases less than 2%. You know, we typically look at 10 at a minimum in terms of retainage. So this is obviously problematic. The good news about all these is, as I said before, everything's moving so slowly. All of these are all still in committee in their originating body. So they're not necessarily moving fast. And they've got a whole host of opposition in addition to entities like BRA. You've got TML, you've got school districts, you've got a whole bunch of folks that just don't like these and don't want to see them move. So that's good news. And then oversight and transparency. If you all remember last session, the legislature passed a bill that put all the state's river authorities under the sunset review process. Since that time, about 4 river authorities have undergone the sunset process, really small entities. They did the Paladuro River Authority, Central Colorado, Upper Colorado, and the Sulphur River Basin Authority. But even with all that, there's now a bill that would remove all of the river authorities from the sunset review process. As we were whenever the bill was passed, we're neutral on that. We have nothing to hide. We're happy to go through whatever process the legislature wants us to go through. If they put us under sunset, fine. If they take us out, fine. It's whatever they want to do. Dates of interest. Just throw these out there. May 12th, last day for the House to consider any major bills of theirs that are non-local. 24th, last day for the House to consider all Senate bills. And then the 29th is obviously the last day of session. So we're getting close. Like I said, I got about a little over 5 weeks. The last thing I'll say is, as it relates to appointments, several of you may have already gotten notice from the governor's office or should be receiving it relatively soon. Those of you who were appointed after last session, so between last session and this session, that still need to be confirmed, I think there's about 10 total. are going to be up for confirmation in front of Senate nominations in May. Most of you will not have to appear. There are a couple of the directors who have gotten a notice that you'll have to go to the meeting, but for the most part, you won't have to appear. What the governor's office will ask you to do is update all your stuff. So all of your financial statements and all of your applications will have to be up to date. So that's what the notice will tell you to do, is just make sure that everything that they have for you is up to date. So, and obviously we can answer any questions that y'all have about that, and just let us know.
Any discussions about special sessions at this point?
Yeah. The betting money is on them definitely having one. I think that what it would be over would be the budget. I think, and you know, the thing with the budget, it's not that the legislature, it's not that each different budget spends a considerable amount more money. They both generally spend the same amount of money. The issue is what they spend it on and how they spend it. You know, the House borrows money from the rainy day fund and pays for everything within the current or within the biennium that it's supposed to pay for it. The Senate doesn't borrow from the rainy day fund, but instead delays payments to certain things until the next biennium. It's an accounting trick, and it's not something, it's being made into a big deal recently as if it's the first time it's ever happened. My first session in the legislature was working for Senate Finance. They've been doing this for a really long time. This isn't anything new. Delaying payments until the next biennium in order to make the budget balance is pretty common practice. But that's probably the biggest disagreement on how exactly they pay for everything. So if they have one, it's going to be on that. And it would probably be immediate. I mean, they would call them back the next day to come in and try to pass a budget. But when they're back then, what all can get added to that special session? The sky's the limit, because the rules in terms of what it takes to pass something in a special session are much different. It requires the bar is much lower in terms of passing stuff. So you want to add vouchers, you want to add bathroom bills, you want to add any number of things, they would have an easier chance passing in a special than they would in a regular. Any other questions?
On the area where you mentioned where you use the river for transporting, is that for desalinated water, or is it for brackish water that's going down to be desalinated?
It's for desalinated water. So it's water that's already been treated.
So it's the same quality. They can take out the same quantity out of the river without having to.
Right.
It's all mixed.
Yes. But no, it's not putting straight brackish groundwater in. No, it's not that. No.
Did you give a prediction on the
removal from Sunset Bill?
So it doesn't have a Senate companion, which means its chances are lower. You know, so it's a standalone House bill. It will be on the floor on Wednesday in the House for the House to consider. My assumption is it will pass the House. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put it on the calendar if they didn't have the votes to pass it. I do not see a path forward in the Senate for that bill to pass. It's Lyle Larson, who's the chair of House Natural Resources. He wasn't necessarily supportive of putting river authorities under Sunset. He thinks it's an unfunded mandate and, you know, wants to take them all out. But again, I just don't see a way for that bill to pass the Senate. I don't know who would pick it up. And I know that there is considerable opposition. The bill that passed the Senate or that passed the legislature last session had about 10 co-authors in the Senate, all of whom are still there. So.
Any more questions? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.